Isaiah 66 is the end of Isaiah. When I started studying this, I thought, well, I usually can study something in a couple hours and get a handle on it and not be too bad. But as I studied it, I got to looking, and there's a lot of stuff in Isaiah 66. It's kind of the ending of the chapter. It is the last book in the chapter, and there's a lot there. You could jump off in Isaiah 66, go anywhere in the Bible, and teach it for hours. I'm going to try to get this I'm going to try to keep it in order, but at the same time, I'm going to have to run around a little bit. So y'all bear with me, and I'll try to get us there and not jump the track too much. Isaiah 66 says, "Thus saith the Lord, the heaven is my throne, and the earth is my footstool. Where is the house that ye build unto me? And where is the place of my rest? For all those things hath mine hand made, and all those things have been, saith the Lord. But to this man will I look, even to him that is poor and of a contrite spirit, and trembleth at my word. He that killeth an ox is as if he slew a man. He that sacrificeth a lamb as if he cut off a dog's neck. He that offereth an oblation as if he offereth a swine's blood. He that burneth incense as if he blessed an idol. Yea, they have chosen their own ways, and their soul delighteth in their abominations. I also will choose their delusions. I will bring their fears upon them, because when I called, none did answer. When I spake, they did not hear. But they did evil before my eyes, and chose that which I delighted not." Verse 5 says, "Hear the word of the Lord, ye that tremble at his word. Your brethren that hated you, that cast you out for my name's sake, said, Let the Lord be glorified, but he shall appear to your joy, and they shall be ashamed. A voice of noise from the city, a voice from the temple, a voice of the Lord that rendereth recompense to his enemies." If we look at those first six verses, the first thing I want you to look at in verse 1 is, "Thus saith the Lord." And when you say something, what is it? It's a word, and a word is a voice. So we're going to kind of get this down. Almost the one aspect I wanted to attack this was a word study. But the word study is, in the beginning, God said, let there be light. God had a voice. John 1:1 said, in the beginning was the Word. The Word was with God, and the Word was God. And then this Word was manifested into flesh. So before Jesus, in the time of this Old Testament, now we just have Word. We don't have Him in the flesh. So we're going to go back in our time machine. We're going to throw away the cell phones, the TVs, and all the things. We're going to kind of put ourselves in their world for a minute. Here, Jerusalem has been made, or the Jew has been made into a nation, Israel. Israel has come up and it's had a temple. This temple has been destroyed. Solomon's temple destroyed. Last week or two, we talked about Nehemiah, how he was the king's cupbearer, and how he was made a mayor or whatever his designation was. He goes back, a governor, and he goes back for the king and rebuilds Jerusalem. Jerusalem, the walls are rebuilt, the temple's rebuilt, and they go on. But before those temples, there was the Word of God. If we go back in Genesis 3, we know that Adam was in the garden, and they heard the word of the Lord walking in the garden. And I thought, how odd that is that Genesis 3, it's a very strange statement, but I'm trying to make a point before we get much into this. Genesis 3, I remember where it is. Second. And they heard the word of the Lord. Anyway. Is it verse 8? Okay. And they heard the voice of the Lord God walking in the garden. Here we have a voice that walks. They heard the voice of the Lord walking. That's a strange thing. They didn't see God walking. They heard his voice walking. So what we're getting into here is kind of like a spiritual thing. And Solomon brought up, whenever he was building the temple, I think it's in Ecclesiastes. Let's look here real quick. Ecclesiastes 8:4. Bear with me and I'll make my point and I'll go on. Solomon said, no, this is the wrong one. Anyway, 1 Kings. It's 1 Kings is where I had this one. Just a second. Bear with me. First Kings 8. I want us to look at this real quick. I made too many notes in too little bit of a time, so bear with me here. 1 Kings 8, 27. And it says here, but will God indeed dwell on the earth? Behold, the heaven and the heaven of heavens cannot contain thee. How much less this house that I have builded. So what I'm trying to get into our minds here is God is a spirit, and God isn't contained in a house, but yet his word is bigger than just my voice coming out today. Let me keep from jumping off track. Thus saith the Lord, the heaven is my throne, and the earth is my footstool. Where is the house that ye build unto me, and where is the place of my rest? For all those things my hand hath made, and all those things have been, saith the Lord, but to this man will I look, even to him that is of a poor and contrite spirit, and trembleth or reverences my word. The God of all creation has come from a word. He's come from the word. The word's been given to Moses. Moses has written the word into a law. The law has now been given to people. The people have become a nation. The nation has grown. They've went through the desert. God has indwelled himself now into a tabernacle because he wants to be with his people. And now he's gone from a word to a tabernacle. And a tabernacle is his presence. Now what we've got to do is we've got to remember in this time, those people lived in kingdoms, they had palaces, they had kings, and the king's word was law. Well, in the same way, God said, even though I've promised you a place and we're traveling around in the desert, you have a king, and I'm your king, and here I dwell with you. That gave them a physical place to look for, a physical place to pray to. So now you have God, who is a word, has his presence. Now they go into the promised land, and God has made promises in that land, and God has blessed them, and they have built Solomon's temple. And now Solomon says, how can God of all creation live in this house? It's bigger than this house. And yet the Bible here says, thus saith the Lord, the heaven is my throne, and the earth is my footstool. So God's saying, yes, I am bigger than what you make me out to be. But here's what happened. At the time of this writing, the people, the Pharisees, the religious, have got a little fiefdom going. You see, they control the temple. They control religion. And it's no different then than it is today. You see, just as we have Washington, and those that are in charge of Washington tell us what to do. Those in charge of religion tell us what to do. The Catholic Church, the Buddhist, whatever religion you want to make it. If you're in charge, well, you get the money, you get the power, you get the accolade. People do what they tell you to do. Well, here the Pharisees are kind of in control. And God says, thus saith the Lord, heaven is my throne, earth is my footstool. Where is the house that you build unto me, and where is the palace are the place of my rest. For all those things my hand hath made, all those things have been, thus saith the Lord, but to this man will I look. God is saying, I do not dwell in that physical building. I am God of the universe, and I don't look at you through that building. I look at you through your heart. If you want to talk to the God of all creation, if you want Him to come and be with you, nearby, peace in your heart, then prepare your heart for Him. He's saying, this man will I hear. But to this man will I look, even to him that is of a poor and contrite spirit and trembleth or reverences, what? My word. It's not that God wants us to bring wagons full of gold and dump them in front of him. It's not that, and it says here, God doesn't want us to, verse 3, he that killeth an ox, it's going to be as if he slew a man. If you think killing an ox is going to make God happy, well, you might as well go ahead and murder somebody, because it's just as big a sin. It says here, if you think making God happy is going to be sacrificing a lamb, well, that's the same as if you sacrificed a dog. And a dog is an unclean animal. He that offereth an oblation, well, if you think that's going to get to God's heart, that's the same as offering swine's blood. He that burneth incense is as if he blessed an idol. But yea, they have chosen their own ways, and their soul delighteth in their abominations. You see, the world said, you got to worship God through this temple. We got God, we control God, and we got him locked in this building. And if you want to get to God, you got to go through us. You got to do it our way, and then you can be blessed. And I'm going to tell you, we're right because we got these big robes, and we're right because we act this certain way, and if you know, you can't be as holy as us, but you can get close, and if you'll just kind of follow our ways, we'll show you the way. Well, that's religion. And God says, it's not in religion. It's him who loves me, who has a contrite heart, who loves my word, who trembleth at my word, who fears me. But that word trembleth and fear, it's who reverences me. He who reverences me, that is who I will look for. I'll look for him. God says, I will find him who reverences me. I am seeking those people who reverence me. That's what God says. He's looking for us. We don't have to go find him. He's looking for us. Those who reverence me. I will, it says here in verse 3, it says, yea, they have chosen their own ways, and their soul delighteth in their abominations. You see, the world loves sin. And to be honest, religion has its own sin. And it loves that. It loves the power and the accolade and the glory that comes by it. If you don't think so, turn on the television. There's a few TV preachers that just love themselves more than they love God. And it shows. They love their position more than God. We can drive into some neighborhoods and some places, and we can see what people have made their gods. But in religion itself, we've got people that worship religion more than they worship God. That kind of gets into the. Has anybody heard of the philosophy we talked about the other day? The philosophy of the participation trophy. Have y'all ever heard of that? Have you heard that, Brother R? And basically, go to church, do right, and as we always talk about, no matter how you live, we're going to preach you into heaven. You'll get a trophy just for participating. And that's basically what religion is. You just participate and it's going to be all right. Well, it says here, verse 4, it says, I also will choose their delusions and will bring their fears upon them, because when I called, none did answer. When I spake, they did not hear, but they did evil before my eyes. What's the evil they did before their eyes? They didn't repent. I spake, and they did not listen. I called, and they did not answer. But they did evil before my eyes, and they chose that in which I delighteth not. Verse 5 says, hear the word of the Lord, ye that tremble at his word. Your brethren hated you. that cast you out for my name's sake, and said, let the Lord be glorified, but he shall appear to your joy, and they shall be ashamed. A voice of noise from the city, a voice from the temple, a voice of the Lord that rendereth recompense to his enemies. I'll go back to my notes on that one, 5 and 6. And I had a thought on it, and let me get kind of... People are harassed because they try to live holy. People are harassed because they try to do what's right. We have got to a point to where we have educated God out of the schools. We've educated God out of the homes. We've educated God out of everything. We live in a world now to where I was at work the other day, and I was talking to one of the men there, and we were talking about Bible story, and he said, What Bible story? And I was telling him, I think it was about Joshua. It was during the eclipse. This guy's name is Josh. And I said, you know, that's a Bible name. And he said, yeah, my daddy told me that. And I said, you know, Joshua commanded that the sun stand still. He said, he did. And I said, yeah. And I said, the sun stood still for about a day. And I said, not only does it say it in the Bible, but in the Chinese, it's said that in the ancient Chinese writings that there is a written of a time of the longest night. So while it was daylight and Joshua was fighting his enemies in China, it was dark for an extra night. And I said, you know, we have history there. And he said, I don't know nothing about that. And then we'll talk about other little things. And I mean, the simplest of Bible stories. Simple. And it's like, what are you talking about? It's sad, the state of this world. It is sad, the state of this generation. We are in a dangerous, dangerous time, and we are looked at as fools. We really are looked at as fools. We who get up and go to church on Sunday mornings are part of that cult. It's all that cult. It's all them bunch of weirdos. You know, when hear the word, ye that reverence or tremble at his word. Your brethren that hated you and cast you out for my name's sake. Right now, in the name of religion, if you talk about the blood of Christ, Jesus Christ is the only way to heaven. Well, the participation trophy people are going to say, who are you to say you're the only one going to heaven? Right. Who are you? Amen. Where do you come off with that? Well, you know, I've got black pride. I've got brown pride. I've got white pride, that makes me a racist. But at the same time, I've got pride in my Lord. Well, you're condemning every other religion, and that's not right. You know, there cannot be no winners in this world anymore. There cannot be only one right way. There are many right ways. You know, and if you don't like it, we're going to persecute you for it. In Islam, we're going to cut your head off. In Canada, we're going to put you in jail. In the United States, well, we're going to figure out a way to do something with you, because all we got to do is get back in control, and when we do, we'll eliminate that problem. You see? We're hated. The people in Isaiah's time was no different. The Pharisees were in control. The powers that be were in control. And it's good for business. Go back to Herod. Think about time. See, Herod was, we talked about him, he was an Edomite. Let's go back to the temple. God was in the temple at Solomon. That temple was destroyed by Nebuchadnezzar, destroyed that one, right? Then it was rebuilt after Nehemiah's time. Nehemiah had rebuilt the temple. This temple stood for a long time, but then it kind of got in disrepair, and along came Herod, and it then became known as, now tell me if I'm wrong, because I'm kind of messing up here. Herod's temple, he didn't build a new temple, he remodeled the old one. And it became known as Herod's temple, correct? Got to look at Herod. Herod's a king. He's an Edomite king, but he's called a Jewish king. But he's okay with the Pharisees, and he's okay with his temple stuff, because Why? It's good for business. I'm the king of Jerusalem. The temple is here. Let's rename it Six Flags Over Jerusalem, and I'm the king of it. Well, that's good for business, isn't it? People are going to come, and they're going to buy, and they're going to sell, and I'm going to tax, and I'm going to grow, and it's good for business. Well, those that were in charge said religion is good for business. And whenever you start preaching this stuff and we don't get to add our laws to it, well, it's bad for business, you see. When God can be found in your heart just by looking in His Word and you don't have to go through us, well, that's bad for business, you see. And it's no different today than it was then. So, that being said, hear the word of the Lord, ye that reverence at His word, or tremble at His word. Your brethren that hated you, that cast you out for my name's sake, said, let the Lord be glorified. They're basically standing there on top of a pile of money and all their thrones and all their power and saying, yeah, little John the Baptist, who are you? Who are you in your little coat of camel hair and your sandals? Look at me in my robe. If your God was really glorified, you'd look like me. Look at me. You see, it's no different. We look today, do we reverence the little janitor that works? Do we reverence the one who doesn't go to jail, who works for his paycheck, who provides for his family? Do we give him any acclimate? Do we give him any pat on the back? The little guy that works 30 years and retires at his job? Do we think that's something great? No. The world looks and says, if you're not a sports star or an actor or a politician or somebody in power or have a blog or a presence on the internet, you see what I mean? It's no different today than it was then. I'm kind of getting sidetracked, sorry. He that heareth the word of the Lord, ye that tremble at His word, your brethren hated you that cast you out for my name's sake, and said, let the Lord be glorified. But He shall appear to your joy, and they shall be ashamed. Got to remember, here is all the other kings and kingdoms. Not only did it happen between the Pharisees and those that were seeking the Lord, it also happened between the other nations in Jerusalem and Israel. What it was, all the other kingdoms said, look at us, look at our power. Who are you, Israel? Who is this God? And yet God says, if you hear me, if you tremble at my word, I'm going to show up. And I'm going to show them who I am. And I'll do it for my sake. And I'll do it for your sake. It says here in verse 6, in verse 7, before she travailed, she brought forth. Before her pain came, she was delivered of a man-child. What I want us to look right there, usually you have birth pains and then you have babies. Is this right, ladies? Okay, labor and then birth, right? God says you'll have birth and then you'll have labor pains. This is backwards. God is saying here, before she travails, she shall be brought forth. Before her pain came, she was delivered of a man-child. Who hath heard such a thing? Who hath seen such things? Shall the earth be made to bring forth in one day? Or shall a nation be born at once? For as soon as Zion travailed, she brought forth her children. Shall I bring to the birth and not cause to bring forth, saith the Lord? Shall I cause to bring forth and shut the womb, saith thy God? You got to remember, here Israel was a nation. Israel was taken into captivity. Nehemiah goes back, rebuilds the walls, and they're reborn. They become a nation again. But then, after a time of Christ, nation is destroyed about 70 AD, when Herod's temple is then destroyed, and it is obliterated. It's gone. They are dispersed all over the world. They've lost their country. They've lost their temple. They've lost their money. They've lost their heritage. They've lost everything, and they're scattered to all the winds of the earth. But yet in a day, in 1948, God makes them a nation again. And when he makes them a nation, then they travail a while. So yes, God has given us prophecy. God has given us a history before it happens of how he's going to do things. He's going to show them that no matter what they say about you, Israel, no matter how much they can do to you and laugh at you, I will show you what I will do. And I'll do it, and I'll tell you I do it before I make it happen. We have 1948, it becomes a nation. It travails for a while. And then something else happens. In 1967, there's the Six-Day War. And on the Six-Day War, they just broke forth. And they got, I had it wrote all down, but I did say they had just a little bit. I think they went from like 80 square acres or 80 square miles to 2,000 square miles. They grew overnight. Six-day war, seventh day they rested, and now they're in control of Jerusalem again. God says, that's the way I'll do it. I'll show you who I am. They may laugh at you now, but I'll show them. It's not enough for the world that God brought the only nation that's ever been obliterated back into existence. And did it with the same money, the same language, the same mannerisms that they were obliterated with thousands of years before. Okay? The Jew today looks just like the Jew pretty much of Isaiah's time. He has the same law. He has the same ways, the same manner, the same thoughts. If you look at their faces, you can tell a Jewish face or a Mideastern face. They have their same culture. It's all the same. It didn't get erased. God brought it back. God did it in 1948. The world saw it. And you know what? It wasn't enough for them to believe. Okay, we'll do it in 1948. We'll do it again in 1967. And I'll do it to where they were outnumbered 20 to 1. 20 to 1. They had all of the, listen, Egypt and Syria, I forgot all the nations that came against them. Iran, Iraq, everybody jumped in on that because we're going to go kill the Jew. They had all the best weapons that the world had to offer. They had the best jets. They had the best tanks. They had the best guns. Do you know what Israel fought with in the Six-Day War? Little Sherman tanks that the United States government left in Europe. Little Sherman tanks that blew up like little matchboxes when they were hit with something. These little Sherman tanks were World War II tanks. They had like, I forgot that little engine they had in them, but I mean, they were nothing compared to the tanks that all the enemies had. They were nothing. But yet, God fought with Israel. He fought for Israel. And they beat their enemies back. Do you know today, if you go out, I have talked to, and this is breaking my heart, I have gone out and I've talked to men, and I said, it's just like the Six-Day War. And they said, what are you talking about? Nobody, they don't teach it in school anymore. They don't want the world to know. They don't want to know about 1948 and Israel becoming a nation again, and our president saying, Harry Truman, wasn't it? Nobody would recognize Israel until Harry Truman did. When he did, the rest of the world said, okay, we'll recognize him too. You realize today, if that happened, that they wouldn't recognize Israel because they don't care what the United States says. We have come to a great time in our nation when the rest of the world doesn't care about us anymore. We have no, well, we're getting off this, but what I'm getting at, 1948 made a nation, and it's not good enough for the world. Six-Day War, not good enough for the world. It's taught nowhere. It's out of existence. I remember it because I studied it, but nobody talks about it. Nobody. Kids don't know about it. So we've forgotten about that. But yet, there's going to come an Antichrist. But let's get a little bit more into 66 here. It says here, verse 9, "Shall I bring to the birth and not cause to bring forth, saith the Lord? Shall I cause to bring forth and shut the womb, saith thy God? Rejoice ye with Jerusalem, and be glad with her, all you that love her. Rejoice for joy with her, all you that mourn for her." Now, how can you mourn for her, but yet rejoice in her? Well, let's go into this a little bit more. "That ye may suck and be satisfied with the breast of her consolations, that ye may milk out and be delighted with the abundance of her glory. For thus saith the Lord, behold, I will extend peace to her like a river, and the glory of the Gentiles like a flowing stream. Then shall you suck, you shall be home, you shall be borne upon her sides, and be dandled upon her knees. As one whom his mother comforteth, so will I comfort you, and you shall be comforted in Jerusalem. And when ye see this, your heart shall rejoice, and your bones shall flourish like an herb, and the hand of the Lord shall be known toward his servants, and his indignations toward his enemies." We're going to stop right there. Today in Israel, if you go, it went from a desert to a garden, pretty much. They feed no telling how many people out of what once was a desert. Megan went over there and she talked about how beautiful that Israel was and how many things were there. That 1967 war, the day that they took back Jerusalem, they basically started building and they hadn't stopped. Jerusalem has brought forth a flower in the desert. And it's a beautiful place over there now. But yet, it's going to happen again that it's going to be knocked down. We know we kind of know the future, and let's get into that. It says here in verse 15, it says, "For behold, the Lord will come with fire and with his..." Turn too many pages. "With his chariots like a whirlwind, to render his anger with fury and rebuke with flames of fire. For by fire and by his sword will the Lord plead with all flesh. And the slain of the Lord shall be many. They that sanctify themselves and purify themselves in the gardens behind one tree in the midst, eating swine's flesh and the abominations and the mouse, shall be consumed together, saith the Lord. For I know their works and their thoughts, and it shall come that I will gather all nations and tongues, and they shall come and see my glory." We know that the time of Jacob's trouble is going to come. And just as they were dispersed and wiped off the face of the nation back in 70 AD, and before that they were dispersed in the time of Nebuchadnezzar when he tore down Solomon's temple, just as they've been knocked down and thrown away before, they're going to be knocked down and the world is going to try to throw them away again. We know that the time of Jacob's trouble is going to come. And even though we didn't remember 1948, even though we don't remember 1967, there's going to be a time in the future that we will remember. And this will be the time when God will stand up. And it says here, in verse 16, "For by fire and by sword will the Lord plead with all flesh, and the slain of the Lord shall be many." And it says here in verse 19, "I will set a sign among them." At the end of this, he said, "I will set a sign among them, and I will send those that escape of them unto the nations. To Tarshish, Pul, Lud, that draw the bow, to Tubal, and to Javan, to the isles afar off that have not heard my fame, neither have seen my glory, and they shall declare my glory among the Gentiles." Here God says, okay, once and for all, you're going to come against Jerusalem. You're going to come against Israel. I am going to defend her, and this time it will be made known. And I liken it into this. I love to watch the movies where there's like King Arthur, and about the kings and castles and all those old kingdoms and thrones and all that. I like that stuff. And that's the way it really is. You see, we have a king, we have a prince of this world. His name is Satan, and he's in control now. And yet, our king, we have exiled him. He did not exile himself, we exiled him. We exiled him in the garden. We exile him in our sin. We exile him in our laws. We don't want him. So we're left with the God of this earth. But one day, whether we like it or not, regardless of the sin of all the world, the King of all kings, the rightful King, the King who we have exiled, who Larry Jones exiled, that King will come in, he'll sit down, and he will fight for his people. He will fight for Israel. He will fight for the Jew. And it says here, all the world will know. It says here in verse 20, and they shall bring all your brethren for an offering unto the Lord out of all nations, upon horses and in the chariots and in litters and upon mules and upon swift beasts to my holy mountain Jerusalem, saith the Lord, as the children of Israel bring an offering in a clean vessel into the house of the Lord. That clean vessel is talking about once and for all, the Jew, Israel, will know who Jesus is. They will look upon him who they pierced, and they will glorify him as God, as King of kings, because they realize that he fought for them and who he was. The whole world will bring all the Jews back to Jerusalem. And we will, whether we like it or not, glorify him who is the rightful king. It says here, I will also take of them for priests and for Levites, saith the Lord. And the way I took this, the priests and the Levites, of course, they're of Israel, but I may be wrong on this. We have to may go into it deeper, but I believe even the Gentiles will be grafted in at this time as priests in this time. It says here that it says that one day we shall rule and reign with him, and I'm thinking that's what this is talking about. There again, your own personal study, work on that, and I could be wrong there. For as the new heavens and the new earth, which I will make, shall remain before me, saith the Lord, so shall your seed and your name remain. And it shall come to pass that from one new moon to another, and from one Sabbath to another, shall all flesh come to worship before me, saith the Lord. There's going to be a time where he will stand upon the Mount of Olives. He will sit upon the throne of David. He will be made the rightful king, whether we like it or not. Whatever the, you know what? The United Nations can vote against it, and it's still going to happen. He is going to be King of kings and Lord of lords. He's going to fight for Israel. He's going to be on this throne. And it says here, shall all flesh, in verse 23, shall all flesh come to worship before me, saith the Lord. And you know what? There's going to be a warning. Now, of course, we know he's going to rule and reign for how long? 1,000 years, right? While he is on his throne and the whole world is deciding what day and what month and what week that, you know, we from Madisonville are going to go worship him, and those from Chicago are going to go worship him, and those from England are going to go worship him, that's what it's all going to be about. It's not going to be about Facebook. It's not going to be about going to a vacation. It's not going to be like going to Mecca. It's going to be, when are we going to go get to see the king? When are we going to go get to look at God, Jesus, sitting on that throne? When are we going to see him? We're going to go worship him. Even those that technically don't want to worship him, because at the end there's going to be some that are deceived in that 1,000 years, and there'll be another battle. But even to those that are going to be deceived, in verse 24 it says there's going to be a warning there. And it said, and they shall go forth, and they shall look upon the carcasses of the men that have transgressed against me. We didn't remember it when Babylon took over. We didn't remember it when Rome took over. We didn't remember it when they came back in 1948. We didn't remember it in 1967. But we'll remember it when he's on the throne. And there will be, they shall go forth and look upon the carcasses of the men that have transgressed against me. There will be a reminder. That valley of Megiddo, for their worms shall not die, neither shall their fire be quenched, and they shall be an abhorring to all flesh. God says, man, you have your time now, but regardless of what your time is, I will have my time. We can fear man, or we can fear the Word. It's better for us to fear the Word than it is to fear man. Brother Jay closes up in prayer.